WTAD. It's the day that Cornerstone stops by. Misty Bliven is here. Misty, have you ever been on the Mary Griffith Show before?
Yes, I have.
Yes, okay. I think I remember that, but you know me, I'm losing my cognitive abilities rapidly, as they say. Do you have a team in the Final Four?
No.
Okay, speak up good and loud there. Okay, Misty, today our topic is post-traumatic stress disorder. We think about this a lot when it relates to maybe people returning from war, but any kind of trauma can leave post-traumatic stress disorder, I'm imagining. So why don't you give us what your definition of PTSD is, and then tell us about how Cornerstone helps treat this, please.
Well, post-traumatic stress disorder is an anxiety disorder that's triggered by a terrifying event. And the symptoms may include flashbacks, nightmares, severe anxiety, uncontrollable thoughts about the events. The symptoms may start within 1 month or may not appear until years after the event. Cornerstone assists people with post-traumatic stress disorder there's several treatments that you can do with post-traumatic stress disorder. One's cognitive therapy, and I think we all do cognitive therapy. All the therapists at Cornerstone do cognitive therapy. There's also exposure therapy, where you help people safely face both situations and memories that a person finds frightening so they can learn to cope with them effectively. And then there's eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, otherwise known as EMDR, and that combines exposure therapy with a series of guided eye movements that help you process traumatic memories and change people's reaction to them, and I am trained in that one.
That's interesting. I've had one of my regular guests also on the Mary Griffith Show is Dr. Brandon Breening, and he has talked a lot about the eye and eye movement as dealing with emotional issues. So I'm glad that you are certified in this, because this is something I think people will find fascinating. You talk about a terrifying event, and you somewhat recover from that, and then something may happen, and it could be years later. That's the problem. You never know when the trigger is going to happen. It was so weird. Last night I had the most vivid dream that I was running around from bank to bank trying to get my money out of these banks because they were all failing. Well, we all know that that's been in the news recently. We also know that logically there's no real reason to believe that's happening here. But I had this long, elaborate dream about losing all my money. I think that happens when you get close to retirement age. That's probably not as terrifying for a 25-year-old as it is for a 65-year-old. But there's a perfect example of something about the way I process money, for example. I lived that out in a dream, and it was terrifying. I mean, I woke up, and it was like, wow, I'm glad that's not real. So do people also have terrifying post-traumatic events in their dreams?
Well, what they're doing is they're processing the things that are bothering them throughout the day. So that's what you were doing.
Why wasn't it like I went to the bank and they said, everything's okay? I wasn't. I was processing it, but I wasn't getting over the terror. Okay, so it's just our dreams are a way for us to process things that happened during the day or are recently to us. And what you're doing is working more cognitively and with this eye movement. Okay, so a traumatic stressor could be the death of a parent, the loss of a sibling, divorce, even though that event kind of happens over a long period of time. Some people are afraid of dogs. Maybe they got bitten as a child. They may not even remember it. Maybe their head fell underwater when they were taking a bath one time, and now they're afraid of water.
Or even witnessing something.
Witnessing. It doesn't have to happen to you, but you could witness something, which is why, you know, many veterans have a problem. They survive, but what they witness, they have survivor's guilt and PTSD. So let's get right to it, Misty Bliven. Let's talk a little bit about these therapies and in as much detail as you would like. I'm especially interested in the eye therapy, but if the other ones come first, let's start there and just lay the groundwork.
Well, the cognitive therapy, it helps you recognize the ways of thinking that are keeping a person stuck and changing the way you think about those things. Like I said, the exposure therapy just helps you face the situations and memories that a person finds frightening so that you can learn to cope with them effectively. So you're exposed to things and you're kind of desensitizing yourself to those things. And then that EMDR, which I do, basically it changes the way, it's going to decrease the emotional charge of the events, of the traumatic events that you've had, because you're going to reprocess those things while you're thinking about them. And the eye movements are with, whether you follow a light bar or there's also tactile with paddles that vibrate, you can do that, whichever one you prefer. And basically it gets the right side of the brain and the left side of the brain talking to each other, because our right side of the brain is the feeling side of our brain, and that's where traumatic events are mostly stored, or traumatic memories are mostly stored. And our left side of the brain is the feeling side of the, is the logical side of the brain. So we're trying to get our logical side of the brain and the emotional side of the brain talking so that we can see it more logically and not just be in the emotion of it.
It's interesting that the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain often do not speak to each other, which in some ways it's good that they're separate, because you can have extreme brain damage on one side and still be alive. And one of the things I always bring up is your ability to speak can be lost, but your ability to sing is still intact. Mm-hmm. Very bizarre, but speech therapists can teach patients how to sing an answer to a song, or, you know, an answer, mm-hmm. not just sing Mariah Carey, but, right. you know, how are you today? I am very fine. Mm-hmm. You know, it's weird, but if you can communicate that way, mm-hmm. All the better. So you're trying to get the brain, both sides, to talk to each other, because both sides are storing the trauma just in a different way.
Well, and usually the left side, the logical side of the brain, it is shut down during times of traumatic events. So what I'm having people do is think about it while the logical side is being activated, so that they can now look at that event logically and not just emotionally.
Okay. Can you, and I know it's radio and it's hard because you have to be very descriptive, but can you, let's say somebody has a trauma, let's talk about they were in a house fire, or they saw their house burn down. They were a child when this happened. They saw their house burn down. Okay, they come to you, they're 24 years old. Okay, give us some idea of how this works when you're trying to do this eye movement thing. So what would you do?
So first of all, I find out what the present day triggers are. Because let's say they don't even remember that there was a house fire. But then as I link up memories that feel similarly, we might get to the house fire. And so then I start with the earliest memory that they can remember. And I have the light bar in front of them, and I would have them hold the memory in mind. There's also a negative cognition tied to the memory. So what does it say about them? Like, I'm in danger, maybe. So I have them think of that too. And I have them think of the feelings that they have right now as they think about it, which might be fear, and where they feel that in their body. So maybe their chest. And I have them follow the light and hold on to all of that. And after a set of bilateral stimulation, which is the light going back and forth, I'd ask them what they notice now. And then sometimes things get worse, or maybe it changes from anger, you know, the feeling changes, whatever changes, but that means that they are processing and there's progress. So I just keep doing that until they're like, I'm feeling okay. Like, and then we might move on to the next memory.
Okay. So it's a process and a series of things that takes a lot of time, and
mm-hmm.
and you know, we often don't remember or don't accurately remember something mm-hmm. that was traumatic to us, but the trigger could happen at any moment. You might hear a fire engine, for example. You also might remember your house burning down, but you forgot that you were the one that was playing with matches in your bedroom.
Right.
So now you have guilt.
Mm-hmm.
It's been suppressed. You really don't understand that you're feeling guilt or causation. Certainly no one blames you. Kids do these things. But as an adult, you haven't come to grips with it because you don't really understand what's going on. So this, again, you've got to get down to the very baseline. That takes a lot of trust. My goodness, Misty Bliven, I mean, you can't just walk in and say, oh, you're traumatized, here we go. It takes a lot of talk therapy to get to this point, I imagine, where this is even useful.
It does, but it also, person has to be willing, because, you know, I've had some people tell me this doesn't work. It's not that the EMDR doesn't work. It's that you're not ready to go there.
Well, if somebody's raped, for example, or something like that.
Yeah.
It's one thing to witness something horrifying. It's another thing to have the horrifying thing happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may say, I want to get better, and you do want to get better, but you're not willing to walk on the bed of nails again.
Yeah.
Right.
And,
so, yeah.
And the one good thing about EMDR is you don't have to tell me much. You don't have to go into detail. So a lot of people like this because they don't have, because there's a lot of shame and guilt in talking about it.
This is, I think, the key to the whole thing. And I've had a little bit of this work done, not quite as extensive as the therapy you're using, but something similar. And it's so interesting because the doctor doesn't really have to know what happened to you. They just have to know what happened to you when you were five, for example. They can get to a series of things, and then they adjust certain aspects of your body and your biomechanics and bring you back into function that's in a healthy relationship with what happened, because it did happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
That mind-body connection, the eye connection, the windows of the soul, why is it so critical, do you think, that it's the light and the eyes that make this therapy work?
So bilateral stimulation, whether it's the light or the paddles, which vibrate back and forth between your hand, it is believed that we process in our REM sleep, and our eyes go back and forth in REM sleep. So this is kind of a wake version of that, and we're processing while awake.
So it's back to dreaming, only guided wide awake dreaming.
Yes.
And this is why so many people take such great stock in interpreting dreams and what dreams mean. And I've done a little bit of work in that area, gone to a few workshops and stuff. My problem is I can never remember. You know, when I wake up, I'm like, okay, I had this dream, but I forget what that's supposed to. Like if there's a red balloon, it means something, but I can never remember what the red balloon means, you know, or something like that. But like you said, interestingly enough, that nightmare I had last night was triggered by something. Obviously, we have been talking in the news a lot about bank failures and the economy. You know, it has no basis in reality. In my world today, I don't think I'm feeling that way right now, but I had that dream last night, so it was obviously bothering me. Did I dream that dream to help get that venom out of my system, or did I dream that dream and it's going to be recurring? If it's recurring, I guess I'm not really processing and not letting go.
Right. So, I mean, you are processing, but if it keeps coming back, you probably still need to process more.
Don't wait till I fall asleep, try to do something in my daylight waking hours, my cognitive hours, to say, okay, Mary, what are the realistic chances this is going to happen? Let's get back to some kind of, you know, reality-based observation of the world.
There's memories that people come back in, and we have to process several times because there's more to it. There's more layers to it.
Don't you find in your work at Cornerstone that's probably the number one statement that could be said of anybody that walks in the door? There's more to it.
Yeah.
People that even come in voluntarily, which they do, you don't go out and capture them off the street, but people that come in for help voluntarily have probably some more layers of stuff, quote, wrong with them than they just want to get rid of the big thing that's shutting down their process right now. But if you want to get them to total health, you have to get them to optimum functioning as a mentally well person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not enough just not to be terrified of dogs anymore, or it's not enough to just process your rape. You've got to get into a whole bunch of other things, all the other things that have happened since then, that you have seen life in a skewed pattern. What are some of the most common reasons people come in seeking this kind of treatment, without giving away, you know, obviously confidentialities? What are some of the areas of treatment that you've seen that maybe people would be surprised? I didn't know you could go to a therapist and get better.
Anxiety, typically. It's good for anything. EMDR will help with anything.
Because anxiety is a weird thing. Okay, anxiety, but why? I mean,
that's a good question. That's what we got to get to.
You know, well, I've got anxiety. Well,
you can't just
take a pill and make the symptom go away. That is not solving the problem. You've got to get to the cause of the anxiety.
Right.
So anxiety.
Anxiety, obviously PTSD. I get a lot of that. Mostly anxiety, but it is good for for anything, because if you suffer from depression, then, or even personality disorders, there's reasons for those symptoms. And so we can figure that out and then process some of that so it's not affecting you the same way.
And is this good? How young can you be and how old can you be to make this be an effective therapy?
So you can be a child and do this therapy. And children, it's so much easier because it'll take less time because they don't have all these memories tied to everything because there's less years.
If you're regressing back to 7 and you're only 8, it's right. a lot easier.
Right.
Yeah. And if you're 80, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So like you can process probably several memories in a session with a child. And an adult, you might process one, or it might take 2 or 3 sessions to do one memory, just depending. So, but you can do it. Anybody who is able to think about, you know, be able to think about the memory, hold it memory with the feelings and the sensations. So as long as they're cognitively able to.
And so children who have gone through a trauma, this would probably be something. I think we talk about this a lot every time Cornerstone is on. Most of the problems we have in our adult life, many of them have a root in our childhood. If they'd only been noticed and captivated in the childhood, we'd have a lot less problems as adults. And so I think it's counterintuitive. I've never had children, but if I had a child and you said, they watched our house burn to the ground, and then 6 months later you said, Mary, bring the little kid in, and I'm going to sit there and have him remember that and think about that for, you know, 10 mm-hmm. or 15 minutes. I'd be like, no, I'm trying to get them over it. But they may not get over it mm-hmm. unless they think about it. So it's kind of like you need a Band-Aid on your boo-boo.
Well,
it's going to hurt when you take it off, but mommy's got to put it on because that's the medicine is needed.
If you tell someone not to think about it, they usually are thinking about it.
Yeah, don't think about pink elephants, and right now all we can think about is pink elephants.
Right.
So there really is no way, healthy way, to block a memory from your mind.
Right.
If a memory is blocked from your mind, it is unhealthy.
And then if you don't address the memory and you just don't talk about it because nobody else is talking about it in your family, let's say, then you look at it as, oh, it's something bad to talk about. And then there's a whole other layer of that that's a problem.
And that happens a lot with sexual assault and mm-hmm. rape victims. They feel that they're guilty. They feel shame on themselves when they were the victim because they don't have an avenue to really get some help and some support. So they never tell anybody, and then it becomes something, well, we just don't talk about that because intrinsically it's bad, and if it's bad, you must have been a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes a lot of undoing. So basically what you're saying is if anybody's experienced anything that they can remember as traumatic and they choose not to think about that, but it still comes into their realm of thinking because you cannot control your thoughts, that's the kind of person who would well be suited for this eye.
Mm-hmm.
This eye.
EMDR, yeah.
EMDR. What's that stand for?
It's long. I have to think about it. Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. You can think about that and how you're going to use that in a sentence. And we'll be right back. We're back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. During the commercial breaks, whether she wants to or not, Misty Bliven has been giving me therapy. I cannot be cured in a 30-second farm market report, but we're making progress. Couple of years from now, I'll be right as rain. We're talking today about a post-traumatic stress disorder treatment for anyone who's experienced any kind of trauma. And trauma, you know, we have to be careful about what we call trauma, because what some people call trauma, other people say, that's it, big deal, get over it. And probably the worst 3 words in the that the therapist never wants to say is, get over it, right? We have to be taken... we have to let them know that people, that this is a real concern. If this is impacting your life, you need to get over it, but we're there to help you get over it. Just saying, telling somebody to get over it is very non-productive. So how, when people come into Cornerstone, they may not even be able to fully identify the trauma themselves. You mentioned depression. A lot of people probably enter some kind of therapy because of depression. How is a traumatic event in someone's life become symptomatic of depression?
Well, let's say, you know, let's say their parents divorced and they're depressed, but they don't recognize that it's the divorce. It's today, whatever's going on today, they feel like that's what's relevant and that's what's causing the depression. Maybe they're having issues in their relationship or whatever the case may be. And so, you know, after talking with them and figuring out there's some past stuff going on, then I would offer up the MDR.
Right. You know, divorce is very prevalent in our society. And I think we've come to a point where adults have used this excuse. Well, it's better than being in a home where we're fighting, or it's better that we both, the father and mother, be happy on their own and fulfilled on their own. Now, again, I'm not advocating that nobody should ever get divorced, but I think sometimes adults tend to put an adult sensibility on children. Children, they're not thinking this. The 7-year-old is not going, oh, won't it be nice when mommy and daddy aren't fighting all the time? Or won't it be nice when I can fall asleep because mommy and daddy aren't fighting? Or won't it be nice this, or won't it be nice that? No. They want mommy and daddy to stay together.
Right.
And if you ever wonder how that manifests itself, wait till mommy and daddy start dating again and see how much the kid hates the new partner, mm-hmm. no matter how nice they are, because in their mind, the perfect thing is mommy and daddy. So again, divorce is a fact of life, but I think adults need to understand divorce is a pattern of trauma. And you need to almost, I wish judges would almost order that before the divorce can be finalized, there has to be some kind of family counseling for the children, because children will think it's their fault, mm-hmm. even though it's not. Children will try to resurrect the relationship, even though there is no resurrection. These kids are going to be spending a lot of their emotional energy trying to recover in their way from this divorce, when this divorce is not recoverable from, except by moving on with a new strategy. So how is it? Do you wish everybody going through divorce had to go through some kind of child processing counseling?
Yes. I think it would be helpful. But I also think it would be helpful if the people who are, I think it'd be helpful for the parents as well to know how it's affecting their children and how it could affect them, and how bringing someone else in to their lives. You know, some people force their partners on the children or they change for their partner, and they're always agreeing with the partner, and before maybe they let the kids do things, and now the partner's there, and now they can't do things. So there's a lot of dynamics there that I think everybody should have counseling there, at least for the education of it all.
And so much of it is, you know, it is so difficult. Everybody always says, I hear people say, my kids come first, but that's a nice thing to say, and I think in their intent is that their kids come first, but I think really their intent on this thing is I come first, and I can't deal with this situation anymore, and I'm escaping this bad marriage, and I'm getting out,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully I can make a better life for my children and my children included in that better life, but they sometimes don't think about how they're processing, because I don't care how awful, you know, your husband or wife is, your kids still look at that as their parent.
Right.
You know, and they probably haven't showed that really, really horrible side to you. I mean, there are studies that show that even children who are physically abused prefer that parent over a stranger who is gentle and nice with them. So this is really deep-seated in mm-hmm. our psyche, to bond with our parents. And that bond, once it's broken, that is a trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter how friendly the divorce was, that was a trauma.
Right.
Same thing could be said, too, if there's a death. Again, nobody can control that somebody passed away, especially if it was something, you know, very sudden. That is going to take some time for children to understand that. Can a child really understand that?
And again, different ages can wrap their heads around different things, and it's something that as they get older, they'll have to wrap their head around maybe different pieces of it.
Is there Is there survivor's guilt? We hear a lot in the veteran community, and we have a whole show devoted just to veterans and their, you know, issues. We hear a lot about survivor guilt. Is there survivor guilt in children when a friend or a classmate or a sibling or even a pet at that point in time dies? Is there survivor guilt? Like, why did this happen? And either will I be next or why wasn't I?
I think it can happen to anybody. I don't think it matters what age you are. I think that anybody, just depending on the situation and the person, the individual themselves, can have survivor's guilt.
So do we not take that seriously enough? I mean, for example, most grown-ups understand that a pet is going to pass away. Mm-hmm. A pet's not going to, unless it's a bird, a macaw, will outlive you. But, you know, the bunny rabbit, the kitty cat, mm-hmm. the doggy are going. Mm-hmm. I mean, something's going to happen sometime and they're not going to be here. It's one thing to have that adult sensibility about it. The other thing that happens is, you know, especially people who, that was their fur baby, that was their child.
Mm-hmm.
They may have the same grieving process as if it was a human being. And, you know, other people downplaying that or making fun of that. And I've been guilty of that. You know, I've been guilty of that, of saying, really? You want 6 weeks bereavement because your dog died? I mean, my dog died too when I was 15, and I got over it.
Right, and again,
maybe I didn't though. You know, but I mean, I think we all are callous sometimes. I mean, I'm using myself as an example. I don't think I'm the awfulest person in the world, but I'm sure I'm fairly average when it comes to sometimes I'm not the most sensitive person in the world either.
And again, it's all individualized. You know, just because it didn't bother you as much as it bothered somebody else, it's, you know, you can't compare what somebody, and trauma, I use this word loosely because some people don't like to consider what they've gone through as traumatic. So that's just a word I use to kind of describe an event that is disturbing. But our worst is our worst. Whether it's just whether you think it's just your dog dying or whatever, that might be your worst experience.
Well, unfortunately for some people, there's so many horrible experiences
mm-hmm.
that there's a category of horribleness that most of us couldn't even possibly begin to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the real deep unpacking has to come, because you've got to get them over. You can't get over all your horribleness at once. You have to tackle mm-hmm. that elephant one bite at a time. How long does this therapy usually take?
It just depends on how much trauma you have to process. You know, I've had people come in and do it for a few months, and they just had one thing they wanted to work on, and they're good. And then I've had other people since I've been doing this, I've got people that I've been doing it over a year with.
So again, how many layers deep?
Right.
And you don't necessarily know that when you open up a case.
No.
So you may go in, and the most important thing, though, is let's talk about the outcome. We've talked a lot about the trauma and how it affects people and how it is detrimental to their life. It keeps them from moving forward. Let's talk about some of the success stories. What happens once you get to the unlocking, when you get the eye movement therapy going, when you get them processed through the incident, the trauma, mm-hmm. whatever it is that's holding them stuck in that place? What are some of the outcomes? What kind of lives are they leading?
Well, they find joy again, and they can do things that maybe they couldn't do before. For instance, maybe anxiety was so bad they couldn't drive somewhere or go into a store because there were so many people, and now they're doing that. I've had people come in because they've had issues with a parent, and they wanted to process that, and they have, and they're able to talk to that parent now without being upset with them. So the outcome's really, I mean, it's amazing to watch.
It can transform the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
The other day I had Debbie Reed on from Chaddock, and she talked about how the family dynamic is kind of like a mobile, like a Calder mobile. So if you start pushing on one end, just blow just so gently, and it starts to twirl, then the rest of it starts to manipulate and turn. How important is it that people that come in that get help through Cornerstone may also recognize that they need help with, you know, may want to involve some other people? Do you ever do, like, start out as an individual but then say, my triggering is also involved with this person? Could, if they can convince them, could they come in? Is that helpful, or is it something you have to do individually?
I would, like right now, I have a couple that comes in, and we've talked to, they wanted to do couples counseling, but they both have their own traumatic experiences, and I want to do EMDR separately with them first.
To get them over that, which has nothing to do with the other one. It's just impacting how they react
right.
to the other one.
So okay. then I'll bring them together.
Okay. So it really is a very individual
mm-hmm.
thing. You've
yes.
got to get over it.
Mm-hmm. Unless a group of people have experienced like a natural disaster, then you could probably do a group EMDR.
Right. Everyone experiences it differently. I just watched a thing about 9/11. You know, I mean, that's been so long ago, and yet it's still, when you say 9/11, everybody knows what you're mm-hmm. talking about, that's of a certain age. And, you know, talking about how different groups can come together, but their experiences still are never quite the same, and so everybody must get some healing. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Misty Bliven, and we're going to bring Drew Quintero in. We believe that he has something to promote, so we'll let Drew. We'll always give Drew the last word. It's 9:52. We're back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Drew Quintero helps with Cornerstone doing their public relations, letting everybody know how great their therapists are. Thank you for bringing Misty Bliven to us again this week. And Drew,
absolutely,
this all takes money.
It does, Mary. So Cornerstone Foundations for Family is a non-for-profit organization here, providing skill, support, and hope to those who need it most. And we have another fundraiser coming up, our 18th annual golf benefit, which will be held on May 19th at Spring Lake Country Club. We're very excited to come back to Spring Lake for another fantastic event. And registration is open, and you can register your team or sponsor a hole. And to do so, you can visit our website at cornerstone-quincy.org, or you can give me a call at 217-222-8254, and I'd be happy to walk you through the process.
And what do you use that money for?
So all of the money that we raise, both from Dancing with Local Stars and our golf benefit, goes to our children's programs. So our Comprehensive Youth Services, our Healthy Families First Steps program, and our Adoption Preservation. So providing mental health to families and children free of charge. So we're very excited to have those services available to the families and the youth of the Quincy area, and to be able to eliminate barriers that come with therapy sometimes. Funding, money, you know, if you're struggling to make ends meet, you know, you're like, well, what's the first thing that we're going to not probably focus on? You know, we got to make sure we have food, electricity, this. We'll push that off. We offer these services free of charge, and then that way children can get the help they need and continue to live productive lives.
It's good to know that there is financial help available because, you know, just recently I was at a forum for the school board candidates, and they talked about yes. discipline and behavioral issues among children in the school. And Misty Bliven, bring you back into this, you know, conversation. A lot of behavior problems are children not able to mentally process something that's going on. So once we find the cause of the behavior, you know, just making them sit in time out, maybe somewhat effective, but you've really got to get down. If somebody's chronically truant, chronically misbehaving, chronically violent towards their peers, something's there.
There's a need behind the behavior.
There is a need behind the behavior. And unfortunately, there just aren't enough therapist. It seems that there's just such a shortage of therapists. Speaking as someone who has made this your profession, why do you think so few people choose this field?
Well, I don't really know.
I mean, you seem to enjoy it.
Yeah.
You seem like helping people.
For me, when Quincy University started their program where you could get your master's in counseling, that made it easier for me to get because I had children and I wasn't going to travel. So, you know, it costs a lot of money to get a master's and to be able to do this.
So there's an investment that you're making, and then you want to be paid a living wage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talk about the need is so critical and the need is there. And I think part of that is one thing that would really be helpful is if people sought help earlier. The earlier children get help, the better off they will be because, again, intensive year-long counseling is just that, intensive, costly. But whatever those problems were, they started to manifest themselves probably before.
Mm-hmm.
If your leg hurts, it's been hurting for a while. You finally go to the doctor and find out, you know, you've got bone cancer. Well, you know, you could have probably started the treatment a lot sooner. So think about mental health as a preemptive, too. I think one thing, especially with parents, if you're out there and you're a parent or you're a young adult yourself and you didn't get this kind of help when you were a kid, how important is it to get children and young adults this help? Because they've got the rest of their lives then to be productive. Talk about the benefit of that.
Well, the benefit of treatment when they're younger is that they don't have a lot of, again, the life experiences that you have to go through to undo the ways that they've learned how to do whatever from watching their parents or learning, you know.
Their coping mechanism is not appropriate.
Right.
But you can break the coping mechanism.
But if you can teach this stuff early on, then they can be more productive and they don't have to, this stuff isn't going to stand in their way to do the things that they want to and to have happier lives too.
So if you've got problems, if you know somebody who has problems, suggest that they look into Cornerstone Counseling. And tomorrow we'll talk about the United Way, and they help fund a lot of counseling in our area. So until then, we say goodbye.